This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Hark! We're living through the golden age of high-speed internet. Or so it seems, based on the flood of commercials you see, like this one.
It's fun for you. It's fun for me. You'll love the net you get with Xfinity. It's fun to up your download speed. The internet you get with Xfinity.
Yeah, sounds great. Streaming high-def movies, uploading gigabytes of photos, surfing around a speedy network all at the same time. But time for a reality check. The truth is, when compared with service in some other countries, American high-speed internet really sounds more like this.
Okay, I'm going to wager that some of our listeners don't even know what that sound is. It's dial-up, folks, and we played it to really drive the point home. No matter how many catchy jingles Comcast or Verizon come up with, the truth is that the United States is no longer the world leader in high-speed internet access.
We pay more, we get less than in many other countries. And in the current knowledge economy, that may mean we're paying an even higher price, a slip in global competitive advantage.
The question is, why? Well, our guest today puts it simply. She says it's telecom monopolies. She says cable and phone companies are the 21st century's railroad and oil behemoths that have a chokehold on American internet access. Susan Crawford is a visiting professor at Harvard and a faculty co-director of the Berkman Center for Internet and Society. She was President Obama's special assistant for science, technology, and innovation policy. Her new book is Captive Audience, The Telecom Industry and Monopoly Power in the New Gilded Age. And listeners, I was about to tell her, welcome to Radio Boston, but this is not a joke. It looks like we actually got our ISDN line to New York, where Susan Crawford is, has dropped on us. So maybe that's a case in point about the uncertainty of modern day telecom. But while we wait for that line to New York to be picked right back up, I put a message out on Facebook today asking people if they like their internet access or their internet providers here in Massachusetts. Comcast, of course, is the big one, followed by Verizon. And we got a whole lot of responses. So if you go to Facebook.com/Radio Boston, you'll see Luke Sundstrom, who wrote, "I don't have Comcast since it's not available in Auburn, but my uncle does work for them, so I can't really say anything bad about them." Whereas Jeff Turton writes, "They've got us by the unmentionables and not much we can do about it. I want to know why we can't have a la carte pricing on the cable channels. I only use about 20% of what's available, but I can't get what I want in an affordable way because of the pricing structure. Plus, no matter what they say, neither Comcast nor Verizon or RCN have terribly quick internet speeds." So that's a taste of what's on Facebook. And I want to throw open the phone lines while we still try to get Susan Crawford back up on the ISDN line from New York. So listeners, just think about who your cable and internet access provider is, and do you like them? Do you think that you're getting your money's worth? Is that $80, $100, $150 you pay every month worth the internet access and speed in exchange? Have you been overseas? Because Susan Crawford's going to tell us that if you go to places in Europe or Australia or South Korea, you'll see a promised land of broadband internet access. And if you've been there, what was it like? And here's a big question. Susan Crawford's going to say that telecom companies, specifically internet providers, possibly should be regulated like utilities. She says they're an essential public service. Would you be willing to pay regulated prices for the internet? Or do you think that regulation would be an even worse stranglehold on technological innovation? Those are the questions we're going to be tackling this segment. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And I've been told now that Susan Crawford is there on the line. Susan, can you hear me?
Yes, it just goes to show that radio really is the most poetic medium we have.
We couldn't have planned it better.
That's great.
But let me give you your full introduction. Susan Crawford is a visiting professor at Harvard. She's faculty co-director of the Berkman Center for Internet and Society. She was also President Obama's special assistant for science, technology, and innovation policy. And her new book is Captive Audience, The Telecom Industry and Monopoly Power in the New Gilded Age. Officially, let me welcome you to this table here, Susan. Welcome to Radio Boston.
I'm delighted to be here.
Let me first ask you, I want to briefly run through a couple countries or areas of the world where you say broadband internet access is better and why. So take us first to South Korea. What's so amazing about the access people have there?
Well, I can literally take you to South Korea because I spent my vacation in Seoul between the two terms. And if you move in an apartment in Seoul, you have a choice of three fiber providers, 100 megabit speeds, up and down, symmetrical. And they'll come to your house within a day because they're so competitive with each other. And you pay $30 a month for TV and data and everything else you'd want.
And at that rate of service, what does that mean that you can do?
Well, it means you can run a business from your apartment. It means you can apply for a job, hold a video conference, download all the movies and games you'd ever want to do, and be part of the global economy, because South Korea sees itself as leading. And sorry, they were just calling me on the other phone. This is really pretty funny. So South Korea, as a matter of industrial policy, decided that everybody there should have a fiber connection to their home. Japan's done the same thing. They're even more fibered up than we are. They've got this world-class, easily upgradable connection. This is a literally thin strand of fiber that has optics running through it, and those laser beams can be upgraded any old time once you've made the investment to put the fiber in, and both those countries have done that.
Well, Susan Crawford, since we did have a couple minutes that we lost from this conversation while we were waiting for that telecom line to come back up, I want to press forward here a little bit at a slightly higher speed. So, and you also point to Europe, and I mean, Europe is maybe a better comparison because it's larger, of course, than South Korea or Japan, more diverse. So what's better there and why?
Well, Europe is many things. So Italy might be quite slow, but in Sweden, they've got very high-speed universal fiber access to people there. Stockholm is a fiber ring. Northern Europe in general, they are not only good on social policy, they see this as part of their social policy to make sure that everybody has a cheap, readily accessible connection. It's just like electricity. There's no difference. And in many different countries, they've taken that approach. The U.S. has let this whole thing go by giving up on both competition and any role for oversight.
Now, you're saying giving up on competition, but, I mean, the industry was largely deregulated, which should have given rise to greater competition. I mean, that was the call to action in the mid-90s.
That was our hope, but we were wrong, because it turns out that it's much cheaper to upgrade a cable connection to give you high-speed internet access than to dig up a copper line phone connection and replace that with fiber. So cable, with this really cheap upgrade path, just steamed ahead. And now they've made their investments. They control markets. Boston is Comcast territory. Mm-hmm. And their only real competition is Verizon Fios. But Verizon has given up. First of all, it's cooperating with the cable companies. There's a federally blessed non-compete that was entered into about a few months ago between Verizon and Comcast and Time Warner. And so Verizon's only going to be serving, at its best, 18 million Americans. Everybody else will have just their cable guy, the local cable monopoly, for high-speed internet access.
Okay, let me jump in here, because I got to ask you, what's wrong with that? I mean, what you're describing, and I mean, you know the term well, is a natural monopoly. It's there for a reason. It's you know, cable companies like Comcast that sunk all the capital into laying that line, so they were, you know, they're sort of first to the mark. You know, what's wrong with that?
Here's what's wrong with it. Everything we do in life depends on it, and they can raise the prices and change the service anytime they want. And they have no incentive to upgrade to the truly world-class network, which is fiber access to the home. They don't need to do that. They've done what they need to do. They've got this second-class network, cable, which can't give us the upgrades, the publishing ability of fiber, and will never have the capacity of a fiber network that everybody else in the world is going to have. So although we led the world for the first generation of internet innovation, it's very unclear that we're going to be anything other than the Pottersville of the internet for the second generation. And what we've really given up on is oversight. There is no real federal role right now for high-speed internet access.
Well, I want to get much deeper into your sort of critique of the federal government in a moment, but I'm still sort of trying to wrap my head around this. It's not the concept so much that I question, but your interpretation of it. Because, for example, nothing's actually stopping Verizon from going full steam ahead and saying, we are going to invest the money to lay fiber to as many American households as possible. I mean, that is a business decision that they could make. And yet they're not. So, I mean, that we can only put the responsibility for that on the shoulders of Verizon executives.
Well, a former Verizon executive, Ivan Seidenberg, was very interested in fiber. He's not there anymore, and Wall Street is telling Verizon, focus on wireless. We haven't even talked about that separate marketplace yet. You may think of Verizon and AT&T as phone companies, but two-thirds of their revenues now come from wireless. And we've got a duopoly on that side, sort of a duopoly with a fringe. There's a little bit of Sprint, a little bit of T-Mobile, but basically it's AT&T and Verizon controlling it. They are doing so well over there with 40% profits and a tremendous control over the market that they have no interest in. In fact, they're ditching their wires right and left. They're not going forward on the wired side.
Okay. So describe to me what you think is the real long-term consequence of companies like Comcast being that sort of natural monopoly in the last mile between us and the vast world of internet content in this knowledge economy.
Well, in a world in which the rich are getting gouged and the poor are being left out, we're not giving everybody in the country this opportunity to come up with new ideas, new ways of making a living, participate in the global economy. This really is just like electricity, which 100 years ago was treated as a luxury. We left a lot of people out and it was far too expensive. If the rest of the world has, as a cheap input into everything it does, this very high-speed connectivity, and we don't have it, the next set of great ideas won't come from here. Scientists can't easily swap data around. You know, we're going to have to solve this problem with the NFL. They're going to be shipping data everywhere. They need high-capacity connections. We need to develop new jobs, new forms of manufacturing that don't yet exist. And without the sandbox to play in of a very high-speed network connecting everybody, we won't be part of the game.
Hmm. Listeners, I'm speaking with Susan Crawford. She's a professor at the Cardozo School of Law and author of Captive Audience, The Telecom Industry and Monopoly Power in the New Gilded Age. And we're talking about the future of your access to the internet, about what Susan Crawford calls those telecom monopolies, and how they may have a stranglehold on American progress, as you just heard, in the future knowledge economy. So do you think you're getting your money's worth every month when you pay that Comcast a cable and internet bill? Are you happy with the service? Or perhaps should we consider a new paradigm when it comes to regulating the internet and internet providers? Maybe something like a utility. Well, what would that mean? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or you can comment online at facebook.com/radioboston. Now, Susan Crawford, it's interesting that I just mentioned Facebook because I know that you use Facebook as an example of what might be sort of a more controlled content environment in the future with big online companies and groups like Comcast and how they're working together. Can you flesh that out a little bit?
Well, these distributors, Comcast and Time Warner, are also in the content business. Comcast owns NBCU. Time Warner owns a number of regional sports leagues around the country. And in order to enter as a competitor in high-speed internet access, you have to enter in both those markets, both for content and for just plain old connectivity. Their ability to raise prices in concert with other programmers around the country, and there aren't very many of them, we've got about four enormous media conglomerates, makes it possible for the distributors to raise the barriers to entry, to make it very difficult for anybody else to show up. Facebook plays a very interesting role here as a potential sort of ESPN of the internet. There could be in the future special rating techniques for Facebook and maybe a couple of other sites. So you would be told by Comcast or another actor that you're getting data access, but you're only seeing a few places. This has already happened in France, where very constrained internet access is sold as a low-cost alternative to people who can't afford the whole package. That's a bad decision for making available to all Americans the riches of the internet, the ability to collaborate with people across great distances and find a new job. Mm-hmm. If all you're seeing is Facebook, that's not going to happen.
Well, I'm wondering if pushback on this front might actually come from within the market itself, because I know you've talked in previous interviews and public forums about, say, the way Netflix felt like it was being held over a barrel by Comcast when Comcast said, you know, you're going to have to pay more to send your content across our lines. But I also read now that, for example, Netflix has decided recently to withhold its Super HD content from Netflix subscribers unless broadband companies agree to host Netflix content for free. So essentially Netflix is taking the chance of making its subscribers unhappy such that they would complain to the Comcasts of the world.
Yeah, this is importing into the internet world all the terrible things that happen on the broadcast site. Listen, it's an arms race because an investor's note went out last week about Netflix, saying Netflix will never reach 90 million customers because the cable distributors won't let them. It's just not in their interest. They've got a monopoly. They can constrain distribution and find ways of charging Netflix more money. The built-in conflict of interest between the cable distributors and Netflix is quite deep. And so Netflix is trying to use its power, its popularity with consumers, to make sure that it gets carried. Just like Oprah had to fight to get carried by cable, and Al Jazeera can topple authoritarian regimes but can't get carried by Comcast, Netflix wants to make sure it can be carried by Comcast. This is an absurd situation. We should make sure that if you're a distributor of data, if you're a Comcast or a Time Warner, you're just in that business. You're not also in the content business, so you don't have this built-in conflict of interest.
Let's take a quick call here. Kathy is calling from Brookline. You're on the air, Kathy.
Hi, Meghna. How are you?
I'm doing well. What's your thought today?
My thought is that internet should be treated like any other public utility. It needs to be regulated, and it needs to be open and affordable for all.
And why? I mean, do you have a personal experience with that?
Because I sure do.
Tell me about it.
A couple of blocks from your studio, I am one of two houses in our very dense urban area of North Brookline that can't get cable. And we've been working hard through our town to get Comcast and RCN, the only two cable providers in our area, to bring cable to our house. And initially, Comcast told us that we would have to pay, are you ready for this? I hope you're sitting down.
I usually am.
$3,000 to bring cable just around the back of the block. And RCN, which provides to everybody across the block from me and has a manhole 30 feet from my front door, wants me to pay $7,000.
To wire your house.
To have the same rights and privileges as everybody else who pays their cable bill.
But does that mean you have no internet access right now? Because you have a phone line.
I have a phone line internet through Verizon that I can't watch a YouTube video, and I work in digital media. I mean, I have to go to other places to be able to upload, and have just recently gotten a Clear Channel box to be able to get internet through a cell tower. I'm about a seventh as slow as I could be through RCN or Comcast.
Kathy,
with the improvement.
Thank you so much for your call. I mean, Susan Crawford, Kathy, is sort of people's exhibit A in what you were talking about, the opportunity cost or the cost overall of not having the highest internet access available. Amazing that a company would say, we're going to charge you $7,000 just to add a line to your house. But let's dig in deeper, though, into what Kathy was saying about conceiving of internet access providers as utilities. This is something that you've written quite eloquently about, and I'm wondering if you could give us your take on why.
Here's the thing. This is an essential input into everything we do, just like electricity. It's not a luxury. You can't actually apply for a job these days without having a high-speed internet connection. Try filling out a form on a smartphone. Very hard to do. You certainly couldn't start a business. You can't participate in the global economy without this. There's a front page story in the Wall Street Journal today about kids going to McDonald's to do their homework because they don't have a connection at home. This is just a utility. It's a basic, essential part of human life at this point. It's the replacement for the old-fashioned telephone line. We decided that everybody in America should have a telephone, that was part of being an American. For some reason, we've been unable to make that leap so far when it comes to high-speed internet access. But a lot of people are pushing for this around the country. There's actually a movement that's not quite visible to itself that needs to coalesce and elect people on this basis and make sure that we exercise oversight over this essential commodity. Mm.
But, you know, on the other hand, for most, if not all, utilities, I'm thinking water, gas, electricity, I pay for how much I use. And I mean, if we were to truly apply that model to internet access, I mean, that paying for usage, paying for the amount of time you're online or how much you up and download, that's kind of antithetical to net neutrality or that concept, isn't it not?
Not really, because we did this for telephone service for a long time. It works fine. You can set peak load. If you're really worried about congestion, you could set peak load pricing and discourage people from using the network at particular times. But here's the thing. These fiber connections, there is no congestion. There's no risk of that. Once they're in, the marginal cost of actually using the network will be very low. It's the upfront cost of making sure this gets installed. It's the hurdle. And flat pricing will be very easy once these things are in. Every other country has found that, that's done this.
Mm, let's take another call. Kelly is calling from West Newbury. You're on the air, Kelly.
Hi, Meghna. I'm calling because we switched from Comcast cable internet to Verizon Fios. It's getting to be about 5 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a science teacher, so I was very interested in the process. And I listened to the man explain it all as he was installing it. And basically what he was saying to me is that in tiny little West Newbury, they were able to come in and put Fios in. But right next door, the city of Newburyport, they were not. It had to do with contracting with Comcast and regulation somehow through the cities versus the towns. And that one of the reasons that the Fios isn't all over the place for Verizon for 5 years now, they've not been allowed to set up in certain places. So it's not necessarily a market correction. If I have neighbors in Newburyport that would love to have Fios and can't, it's not available to them, even though they're Verizon customers.
Kelly, thank you so much for your call, because that takes us right to sort of the 800-pound gorilla in the room, Susan Crawford. When Kelly said Verizon is not allowed, that has a lot to do with local, state, and sort of federal, a whole mix of laws and agreements that have led to this monopoly / patchwork that we have across the United States. Can you tell us a little bit more about how we ended up with the regulatory schema that we do have?
Well, we did think back in 1996 that these guys would compete so fiercely with each other. So cable would compete with phone, everybody would compete with wireless, and that that would protect consumers, and that we could somehow, I don't know what the pixie dust was, but that everybody would get universal service as well because it would be worth it for some company to provide it. None of that has turned out to be true. Wireless is an entirely separate marketplace. 80% of people who have a smartphone also have a wired app, connection at home. And as I described a few minutes earlier in the program, it's so much cheaper to upgrade from copper phone lines, from cable to faster cable than from copper phone lines to fiber, that cable took a huge leap. And with the advantage of the exclusive franchises it has had for many years until 1992, was able to control markets. So Verizon made a decision and announced a decision back in March 2010 that it wasn't going to be further expanding its footprint in Fios. Mm. It may now be claiming that it's blocked by city regulations, but this all points to a need for not to wait for Verizon's goodwill or Google's goodwill. They're doing a network in Kansas City, but to take this on as a matter of public policy. This should be a basic commodity utility service available to everyone. Australia's made that decision. They're going to have 93% of their citizens with fiber to the home in the next few years. It just takes some leadership and some will to get it done.
And you mentioned Google, which is interesting because the lines that they laid in Kansas City 3 months ago are 1 gigabyte per second, which is lightning fast speed that I can hardly even imagine what that means that they can do. And if we have time, I'm going to ask you a little bit more about that. But what I do want to dig in with you in the last 4 or 5 minutes that we have here is what has prevented federal lawmakers from doing something about this, if indeed anything needs to be done. I mean, just earlier this hour, President Obama was talking about how, you know, the future is in the knowledge economy. We need people who have skills and access to all sorts of technology, et cetera. But so it's very much in the air, this idea that we have to be, you know, part of the future. But what has stopped federal lawmakers from doing anything about the telecom industry?
Well, I have high hopes for Obama 2.0. I think they will want to and will need to take on this issue in this next term with the president. You know, right now there's no upside for a congressman taking this on. If he or she decides that they really care about high-speed internet access and they want to investigate, they're going to find that their campaign contributions get gutted from these guys. AT&T is one of the largest campaign contributors since 1989. Far more money flowing out of AT&T than Goldman Sachs. They're extremely well politically connected, and they are 95% of the lobbying power on the Hill and at the FCC.
$50 million, I understand, since 1989.
Yeah, a lot of lobbying. So there's a lot of confusion and a certain amount of self-deception, frankly, on the part of the people in Congress. It would be so tough to take it on from their political perspective that there are no big companies standing on the other side saying you have to do this. That's another problem with this fight. Usually there are big companies fighting big companies, and congressmen can dig in. Right now, everybody's sort of holding their breath. They're a little afraid of Comcast and Verizon, the other guys.
Mm. Well, one of my favorite examples of also perhaps conflict of interest, say in the FCC, and this is one you know well, when the Comcast NBC Universal merger went through. Meredith Atwell Baker was one of the FCC commissioners who approved that deal, and she left the agency 4 months later to become a lobbyist for Comcast. I mean, so
right. And, yeah. These are—they're not bad people. It's tough to get a job after you've been an FCC commissioner, but this—it's hard even for an outsider to understand the warm pond of familiarity that is the Washington telecom policy world. Everybody knows each other. Everybody's basically nice to be with, and these jobs just get shifted around. So Michael Powell, who actually deregulated this industry back in the early 2000s as chairman of the FCC, now runs the Cable Association. Mm-hmm. He's the guy. And this kind of thing just happens all the time.
So what's your top two policy prescriptions then to sort of change the way that, or maybe create a more environment for a greater competition with telecom and internet access in America?
Now, the most important thing we need to do is empower mayors to make this decision for themselves. So Mayor Menino, it should be easy for him to say, I want to have competitive fiber in Boston. And mayors all over the city, all over the country should be able to do this. Right now, that the incumbents, the telecom guys, have succeeded in passing legislation in nearly 20 states that makes it either impossible or very difficult for cities to build fiber networks for themselves. We need to roll back that legislation either by preempting it at the federal level or by rolling back individual state laws. And then as mayors do it, everybody else gets jealous and the status quo changes. That's what we're seeing with the Google network in Kansas City. Other people are getting jealous. They see what's possible and they wonder, why can't we do it here?
So don't you think a little bit of this is already happening? I mean, you said there's no big company standing on the other side of this issue. Perhaps, you know, the Googles or the future Googles of the world will see that there is an opportunity for them.
Yeah, we can't wait for private companies to decide that it's in their interest to provide a deeply vertically integrated network over which they have control to us. This has to be a common carriage, open, wholesale, you know, commodity thing in every city. And that takes public policy. That's not something we wait for private companies to do.
Well, Susan Crawford is a professor at the Benjamin N. Cardozo School of Law. She's also on the faculty board of the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard, and author of Captive Audience, The Telecom Industry and Monopoly Power in the New Gilded Age. Susan Crawford, such a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And thank you for weathering our own telecom disruption at the beginning of this conversation. I want to wrap up this segment today with a comment from Stephanie Flores, who wrote on our Facebook page, "We're only a stone's throw away from these companies being able to throttle or completely stop our internet connection at any time for any reason." However, at this present moment, she's happy with Comcast because they gave her a killer deal when she called them to cancel and move to Verizon. So Stephanie says Comcast brought the price down, so she stayed, but she'll sing a different song if her internet gets throttled one day. Be careful, Comcast. So maybe an individual consumer there saying there's another way forward here. Well, stay with us because when we come back, we'll get Massachusetts' reaction to President Obama's speech on immigration reform. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.